Today, who's telling porkies now? Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is posts covering finance and property news. Well, the unelected neoliberal biased International Monetary Fund, one among many technocratic groups that are trying to impose top-down advice based on their understanding and underlying philosophy, recently reported their latest advice to Australia. Their concluding statement describes the preliminary findings of IMF staff at the end of an official visit, or mission. This time, the IMF gave a mixed assessment of recent government budgets and whether Treasurer Jim Chalmers and his state counterparts were helping the RBA to tame Australia's worst inflation outbreak in decades, because they warned the federal and state governments that any further unexpected rise in spending will force the Reserve Bank to keep interest rates high, and that future cost of living relief needs to be targeted. They also called for a complete overhaul of Australia's tax system and suggested the government phase out $52 billion worth of superannuation tax concessions and $19 billion worth of capital gains tax discounts to fund a reduction in personal income and company tax rates. Growth, they say, is expected to start picking up at the second half of the year, reaching 1.2% for 2024 and 2.1% for 2025. Real wages growth is expected to boost private consumption, they say, while public demand is expected to remain solid. And meanwhile, it remains too early to assess to what extent the recent income tax cuts would be saved or spent by households. But they warn, with large uncertainty surrounding the macroeconomic baseline, the balance to risks are tilted to the downside. Chalmers, of course, has repeatedly stressed that federal government spending initiatives are not at odds with the RBA and that the government's policies are helping the central bank's inflation-fighting efforts. But the IMF begs to differ. And of course, the Treasurer revealed on Monday that the budget posted a $15.8 billion surplus in 23-24, but the Treasury forecasts that the government's balance sheet will swing into a $28.3 billion deficit this financial year as spending pressures mount, and from then on, it's wall-to-wall deficits. Now, before we get into the detail, we should note that the IMF says vigilant monitoring is essential to identify risks that may require remedial policy adjustments. International cooperation on these efforts is critical in today's globally integrated economy, in which the problems or policies of one country can affect many others. IMF membership, which includes nearly all the world's nations, can facilitate this cooperation. They go on to say that IMF monitoring typically involves annual visits to member countries. During those visits, IMF staff will have discussions with government and central bank officials about the risks to domestic and global stability and policies and reforms to address those risks. After completing the revaluation, IMF staff presents a report to the Executive Board for discussion. The Board's views on the report are provided to the country's authorities, concluding a process known as Article 4 consultation. In the interest of transparency, most member countries publish the staff report and accompanying analysis, as well as the views of the IMF Executive Board in a public statement. Now, Chalmers has argued their budgets have borne down on inflation. But while the fund says it welcomed two consecutive federal government surpluses, it said Dr. Chalmers' third budget in May had a positive fiscal impulse, meaning it was adding to economic demand when inflation is still high. This mirrors internal RBA research obtained under Freedom of Information laws back in June, which found that the May budget added more money into the economy than it removed, making it slightly expansionary. Significantly, the IMF also said that the federal government's decision in May to give $300 energy rebates to every household may inject some additional stimulus into the broader economy. The IMF actually called for household transfer payments to be targeted wherever possible. The federal government's electricity bill rebate, as well as similar subsidies recently announced by the Queensland and Western Australian governments, are paid to all households rather than just vulnerable ones. And we're certainly seeing some evidence of this in our household surveys, the findings which I will discuss on Tuesday during my live show at 8 p.m. Sydney time. Some are benefiting from the payments despite having strong cash flows and savings, whereas for those under financial pressure, the rebates are hardly touching the sides, creating an even more unequal story, financially speaking. Indeed, one in four mortgage holders have had to skip paying for another expense to prioritise keeping a roof over their head. That's according to Finder. Now, this is an important point because Dr. Chalmers and Finance Minister Katie Gallagher have hinted that they plan to announce another round of household subsidies before the next federal election, as Labour tries to placate voter anger over high inflation, or could we suggest trying to buy votes at the next election? Now, we should recall that the RBA Governor Michelle Bullock has also made the point that electricity rebates only temporarily lowered headline inflation and did not affect underlying price pressures. The IMF supported this approach. The IMF said that state and territory budgets had proven more expansionary than expected in the near term, due in part to a mix of cost of living support and infrastructure spending. Should disinflation stall, expenditure rationalisation at all levels of government could help lower aggregate demand and support a faster return to inflation to target. In particular, infrastructure spending could be carefully prioritised to avoid aggravating construction capacity constraints by focusing on boosting productivity and facilitating the green transition, they said. The notion that demand still outstrips supply, again, aligns with the RBA's recent statements. For example, in the construction sector, government projects are mopping up much of the available workforce, thus deprioritising home construction. While the IMF expects inflation to substantially return to the RBA's 2-3% target range by the end of next year, it said a range of factors could delay progress. This includes rising house prices, which could encourage people to spend more, as well as a potential increase in government spending. Supply chain disruption caused by the uncertain external environment could also lead to a sharp rise in shipping, energy and food costs, which would also complicate the fight against inflation. The IMF stressed risk to inflation in Australia remained and endorsed the RBA's restrictive policy stance, but warned that interest rates would need to rise if progress on lowering inflation stopped, potentially due to stronger than expected government spending or global supply chain disruptions. This may in turn raise prospects of higher for even longer interest rates with implications for consumption and investment, the fund said. IMF Australia Mission Chief Lamin Lee said that the last mile of high inflation was proving particularly difficult to tame in Australia. While he said the RBA's 4.35% cash rate was appropriate, Mr. Lee said that the central bank may need to raise interest rates again if inflation stopped falling. Governments will also need to play their part in tighter fiscal policy. We are very much of the view that we need to bring all the policy levers together in a mutually reinforcing way and a very complementary fashion to help inflation back to target, Lee said. Should disinflation stall, a tighter fiscal stance should be warranted, while better targeting of transfers could more efficiently support vulnerable households. The IMF also noted that the balanced set of macro policy measures since the pandemic had helped reduce inflation while avoiding a deterioration of the jobs market. This is geek speak for the RBA not lifting rates so high and hard as New Zealand, the US, Canada, or the UK, for example, to preserve the employment wins. The question, of course, is whether this makes sense if, in fact, as a result, interest rates remain significantly higher for a lot longer. All four of those countries have now commenced a cutting cycle, which in turn could put pressure on the Australian dollar. Now the political spin came furious and as predictable as night follows day. Shadow Treasurer Angus Taylor said the IMF report confirmed federal government spending was keeping interest rates high. While the Treasurer pats himself on the back, Australian families know their household budgets are in tatters because of Labour's economic mismanagement, he said. Whereas Dr. Chalmers said the IMF had endorsed Labour's responsible economic management, the government's primary focus is to get on top of our inflation challenge without ignoring the risks to growth, and the IMF has backed that strategy, he said. The IMF also called for an overhaul of the nation's tax system, which it said was too reliant on direct taxation of individuals and companies, hindering economic growth. Tax breaks, including from capital gains discount and superannuation concessions, could be phased out to generate a more equitable and efficient tax system, the fund said. Broad-based tax reform should be accompanied by moves to enhance the sustainability of government spending, with the IMF pointing to the government's attempt to rein in spending on aged care and the National Disability Insurance Scheme as positive first steps. With the Albanese government considering scaling back negative gearing and the 50% capital gains tax discount, the IMF said there was a case to re-evaluate tax concessions pay to property investors as part of a broader package designed to address Australia's chronic housing shortage. Treasury is actually modelling changes to negative gearing and the 50% capital gains tax discount, but the government has indicated it would only consider reforms if it believes changes would boost housing supply. Apart from raising taxes on superannuation balances of more than $3 million, the Albanese government has no policy to scale back superannuation tax concessions, which would be politically risky. For most taxpayers, superannuation earnings are taxed at a concessional rate of 15% instead of a person's marginal tax rate, which costs the budget around $30 billion in foregone revenue last financial year. That's according to Treasury. Earnings on superannuation balances are also taxed at 15% for workers and not taxed at all for retirees, costing taxpayers another $21.3 billion in foregone revenue again in 23-24. Switching from stamp duty to land tax and re-evaluating tax concessions to property investors were also identified as part of a broader set of policies that could solve Australia's housing shortage alongside an overhaul of restrictive planning and zoning regulations. So all up, you can see here that from the IMF's point of view, neoliberal of course, reduce taxes, squeeze the economy, there's an interesting debate about whether that's the right way to go. On the other hand, Chalmers, I think, needs to stand up and admit that some of his policies are inflationary, and of course the RBA is stuck in this nether region between interest rates too low to actually help the economy, but too high to squeeze inflation out. So everybody has some blame here. And the bottom line is this. There are lots of porkies flying around at the moment, everybody trying to blame other people for the mess that the economy is in. Trouble is, I don't see a way out. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.